moi confiance. Sinon, change. Hell is my stock question.
Hello.
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very good. We are just the two of us today, which is kind of fun to be back, just you and me talking about music, which we've been doing for years and years now, so it feels very natural and comfortable. And we are talking about the best song or the perfect song for air guitar. So, Fred, do you air guitar quietly at night?
I still do. No, it's become such a habit from the age of, 13, 14 or something. You know, we grew up in the era of guitar rock, right? I mean, yeah. The 70s were like massive guitar rock, and every band had a live album with like extended versions full of soloing and stuff. And I remember standing in front of the mirror and playing air guitar. And then suddenly your mother walks in and you sort of called, like, oh, my God.
Oh, okay.
But I also remember when I was, I think, about 16, we formed a band with two schoolmates. And it was an imaginative band. You know, we only had it in our minds because we barely played instruments. And but we were going to be called Smudge. And, and we practiced along other songs with brooms and, you know, tennis rackets, playing air guitar. One of those guys actually became quite well known as a guitarist. I mean, he's very good, and he plays sort of a Brazilian music and what's called world music. And me and the other guy formed a punk band a couple of years later. So we all continued in our, the air guitars became real guitars. But I still air guitar, don't you?
Of course, yeah. I mean, it's a kind of a joke because, you know, sometimes guitarists, you know, they're pulling all kinds of faces and doing all kinds of movements and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very overstated because actually it doesn't take a lot of physical effort. You know, it doesn't cause you pain, you know, to play a note on a guitar, even if you're bending kind of heavily. So a little bit of sarcasm about the idea of air guitars. But I did do some research on air guitars. It does have a little bit of a history because apparently it derives from Finland, from a class in which the teacher asked the kids to think about something that would realistically create world peace. What would realistically create world peace? And the kids came back and they said, well, if everyone was air guitaring, they wouldn't be able to hold guns. So realistically, air guitaring would solve the world's kind of problems, which was so sweet. And this is why the air guitar world championships are always held in Finland.
In Finland?
In a small town.
Maybe it will become an Olympic sport at some stage, because breakdance became an Olympic sport. Yeah, I think the first one was held in 1996, the first air guitar competition. Yeah.
I mean, they judge it in the same way. There's a set of judges where it's rather reminiscent of gymnastics. And actually, it uses the same scale as gymnastics. And the most successful air guitarist who's won the American Air Guitar Championships four times and the global one twice, his name is Aristotle. And that's his stage name. And he said that, you know, a lot of people who compete in this air guitar, you know, they dress up like glam rock or like heavy metal. He said he was younger than that. He grew up listening to Green Day. So he tried to look like a kid who had just come home from detention. When they asked him why he does this, he said he just thought that it was a good way to be as stupid as possible and be rewarded for it.
How old is he?
I don't know. It looks like mid-20s, I guess.
Okay.
Just by it's very impressive. But it is a sort of very well-supported kind of tournament, you know. It's not going away.
20-something years now.
Yeah. And some of the people really are absolutely incredible. The latest winner was a Japanese woman, and her performance was just amazing.
And do they choose the song they want to air guitar to?
There's three rounds.
Okay.
So there's one round you choose your own, one round they choose it for you, and if there's a tie in the scoring than they do a guitar sudden death, which is also done with music that they choose. So pretty incredible. So we're going to do our sort of favorite choices for a guitar. But just before we get there, I just want to mention that one of our previous perfect songs for, which was called The Perfect Song for a Sad Breakup, really has sort of taken off. And a lot of people sent in their suggestions. I've added them to the Spotify playlist. There are some really absolutely fabulous suggestions. And I just wanted to thank people for participating in it. And please keep them coming. And we really appreciate it when people have sort of great ideas and contribute. And of all of the songs, let's just take a listen to one, which I thought was one of the best.
I can hardly bear the sight of lipstick on the cigarettes there in the ashtray. Lying cold the way you left them, but at least your lips caressed them while you packed. Or the lip print on a half-filled cup of coffee that you poured and didn't drink. But at least you thought you wanted it. That's so much more than I can say for me. What a good year for the roses. Many blooms still linger there. But long could stand another mowing. Funny, I don't even care. As you turn to walk away, as the door behind you closes.
So that's A Good Year for the Roses by Elvis Costello. What do you think? Nice song, hey?
It's a lovely song, yeah. You know, there's so many songs that we could have. I was thinking maybe we should have another episode about it much later on, maybe with a slight variation, but it's also about breakup, about maybe happy breakups, yeah. Or, you know, like something slightly different but related. Because I got several WhatsApp messages from our listeners.
Yeah.
Well, one just said that we were stupid and that we forgot. she is Dutch, and she mentioned the Lucifer song, House for Sale, which I initially had on my list, actually. And then I thought, you know, that the theme was quite similar to the theme of the national song that we picked. And so in the end, Lucifer was dropped. But it's a beautiful song about people leaving their house, you know, the house with all the memories, and now new people are walking up those stairs. And, you know, of course, they don't know anything about those memories, so they just wipe them away and rearrange everything and make it their own home, which, of course, at some stage will also be up for sale, etc. But it is a good song, and I agree it should have been, we should have made it much bigger, actually. It should have been the breakup top 10 or something.
yes.
Yeah, 30 songs. And then another one from our listener, Leslie Cowling from Johannesburg. The previous one was from somebody in New York. So we got listeners in New York as well now. She said, Leslie Cowling, here's my top three breakup songs from the previous episode. She was referring to the kissing episode, which came after. She said, Ricky Lee Jones, Last Chance, Texaco. Johnny Cash, Hurt. And Regina Spektor, Fidelity. And then she said, Bonnie Raitt, I Can't Make You Love Me, Fleetwood Mac, Silver Spring, Honorable Mentions. So there we are, five more. And to be honest, I know the Johnny Cash song. I don't know Regina Spektor's Fidelity, and I'm not sure if I know Ricky Lee Jones's Last Chance, Texaco.
Yes.
But of course, Hurt was written by Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails, who did a slightly different version of that song. Yeah, I don't know if I agree with Johnny Cash, to be honest, but that's fine.
So, great, thanks for that.
Didn't you also get a few comments?
Do you want me to mention some of the songs?
Yes.
One was There Must Be a Way by Louis Armstrong. The other one was a Mark Knopfler song sung with Emmylou Harris. You know, they went on tour together, and the song's called If This Is Goodbye. And then there was the George Michael song, I Can't Make You Love Me.
And wasn't there a Tori Amos song as well?
There was, which is called Tear in Your Hand. Also, oh my God, I was sort of like depressed already.
Well, let's play some rock and roll then.
Let's play some rock and roll. All right, well, that was pretty wild. I'm Going Home from 10 Years After, live at Woodstock. Tell us about the song.
It still brings a huge smile on my face when I hear it. It's featured in the Woodstock movie. And right. I guess that's where I first heard it. So it must have been like, I don't know, 12 or something, I guess, because I think that movie came out in 1970, but I didn't see it straight away. But it was also the soundtrack, you know, the triple album with the highlights from that 3-day concert. Most of the bands were American, but there were a couple of British bands, The Who and Joe Cocker, and 10 Years After. With, well, maybe Joe Cocker did, but 10 Years After and The Who certainly didn't so fit with the love and peace vibe of Woodstock, as you can from this song. As a teenager, I loved it. I mean, we should also play the intro, because the intro is just him going incredibly fast on those strings. Yeah. I mean, it's a perfect song to put you off guitar playing for the rest of your life, because you know you can never, ever play so fast. Well, I don't think I can, but I thought it was groundbreaking. I'd never heard anything like that before. And the faces he pulls, I mean, you talked about pulling faces. His faces were incredible in that movie. I mean, he's with his chin and his cheek and his lips and eyes closed, eyes open, and goes on forever and ever. And then it turns into a rock and roll medley, and then it comes back to the I'm Going Home theme. I still think it's an incredible song to play. Air guitar, you know, there have been albums, the best air guitar album in the world ever, Volume 1, which is a double album with like, I don't know how many songs, about 40 songs. Yes. And there's not a single mention of 10 Years After on it, which I found shocking. You know, you get like bloody bad company, you can't get enough of your love. And Down. I mean, really? This and Apache by the Shadows. Come on. I mean, where's 10 Years After?
What do you think you need for a good air guitar song?
I think it needs to be fast and in your face, but I know you disagree because I know the songs you've chosen. And it needs to be instantly recognizable, I think. You know, it was a toss-up between this one and Free Birds by Lynyrd Skynyrd, which is a notorious air guitar tune, because they all go berserk. And that was a third one that I had to throw away, which is by Blue Oyster Cult. And it's on their live album, On Your Feet or On Your Knees. And the song's called ME262. And at some stage, all five members play guitar. So they're at the front of the stage and all of them go berserk on their guitar. And it's like you can pick which air guitar you want to do. And it's just an incredible noise, but it still keeps the melody there. It's a fascinating piece of music. So those would have been my three all-time, old-school air guitar bits. And they're all loud and they're all in your face. And recognizable. There we are.
I think one of the things that you need on an air guitar album is a very distinct lead sequence. So you need something which has a lot of fast movement and a very distinct sound. I found this choosing very difficult because I thought it would be very obvious which were the best air guitar songs. Mm. But actually, there are zillions. That's because the art of guitar playing really is just extraordinary. I mean, it is just absolutely extraordinary. So, you know, I was just thinking about, you know, the choice that you have is just frightening. because there's so many people have made an art and a living out of, you know, playing the guitar, and there are so many little lead solos all over the place, a lot of which have, you know, some of them are weird, some of them are fun, some of them are very fast, you know, and it is something that guitarists love to do because you spend so much time learning how to play this damn instrument. It's great to be able to show off just a little bit. You know, theoretically, or at least by reputation, people don't really like guitar solos because they find them dull. And
it's a very boys thing as well, isn't it?
Correct.
I haven't seen a single mention of a woman.
Although there are a whole bunch of very good women guitarists.
Yeah, certainly. But it's, you know, there's all sorts of...
Historically, it's been a kind of guy's thing.
Guitar World has a top 10 of air guitar tunes. And I was really surprised. Number one is Layla by Derek and the Dominoes, which didn't so occur to me. I mean, they had Jimi Hendrix, they have AC/DC, they had The Who, they had Lynyrd Skynyrd. But Layla... I don't know.
Well, it suits your criteria that it must be instantly recognizable.
Yeah.
What's interesting about our choice, as we will see, none of us chose Jimi Hendrix. None of us chose Eric Clapton. Neither of us chose Eddie Van Halen. So no. I think there's going to be quite a lot of people saying that we missed
more
out on the
Slash.
Best
ones. But, exactly. Yeah, but we didn't. Chuck Berry.
No, that's...
And but I also found the Stones are not often mentioned in the whole air, whereas they had incredible guitar riffs.
Yeah,
which
you
could, because I think it shouldn't be restricted to lead guitar. It can be rhythm guitar just as well. Yeah. Anyway, we'll get to that later. Let's move on.
Okay, so this is my first choice. That is Judas Priest, of course, with Painkiller. For me, Judas Priest sort of stands in for a whole bunch of potential air guitar masterpieces. They were right in the beginning of the heavy metal movement. In some ways, they kind of defined the sound. In some respects, I would say, along with a bunch of others, I guess. But they were definitely part of the original movement. They've been going now for, I don't know, 30 or 40 years. The two things that I think are interesting from a kind of musical point of view is, first of all, the squealies, which I don't know who discovered them, but they definitely are a feature of heavy metal music. And the other thing is the double bass hit. So this is when you're playing the bass drum on the 16th note. In order to do that, you have to have two hammers on your drum pedal, which hit soon after each other. And I find Judas Priest, you know, they're quite hard to listen to after a while. But I mean, they are fabulous musicians. I mean, it's just incredible. Strangely enough, I can't appreciate it really because I'm not a great heavy metal fan. But they do play a Joan Baez song, which is kind of strange, called Dimes and Dust. And they do it so well, you know, it's just obvious that they could play any kind of music and be good at it. Anyway, what do you think?
From when is this song, do you know?
Yeah, it was around about 1990, I think.
In the 70s even.
Yeah.
I mean, they were part of you had Black Sabbath, and then after that came a whole bunch of metal bands that sort of followed in.
Yeah.
Guitar solos always go into the higher regions, don't they?
Yes, exactly.
And I once asked the guitarist, why is that? And he said, because of the human voice. You know, when you go high, it's like crying or excitement, or because there's no reason not to play on the low notes, which hardly ever happens. I mean, it does happen occasionally, but it's the high notes. And I think also it stopped with punk. Punk, they said, you know, we hate no Elvis or Beatles or Rolling Stones in 1977. And there was a sort of aversion to the solo guitar for a while.
Yes, that's right.
But then, you know, we got hair metal and sort of Guns N' Roses, and they brought the guitar solo back. But in punk rock, you didn't play guitar solos. That was sort of like, you know.
No, because there was this whole kind of thing about indulgence and self-indulgence.
Yeah,
macho
and...
But just on the high thing, you know, and you could hear it quite a lot, was that I was talking about the squealies or the squeals in something called a pinch harmonic, which is basically a harmonic note, which is much higher, which lifts it even higher than the register of the guitar. And it lifts it out of the mix, I think. That's the other thing. That sort of,
It's hard to do in a solo.
Yeah.
Because you have that speed.
Very fast.
And you mustn't press the string altogether.
You just touch it. Yeah. Amazing.
There's also a machine that lifts it an octave, eh?
Yes, no, that's right. I don't know how many people use it. Oh, really? Is that so?
They were big on it. It's a great song. I liked it. You know, I'm a closet metal fan, so...
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on. Your next song is very, very recognizable intro, which I thought was very interesting. Here we go. That is Voodoo Child from Stevie Ray Vaughan's version. And the start that I was talking about was the Jimi Hendrix style, which is basically a phaser on the pedal as you're playing. You know, it sort of just makes it so much more.
And a wah-wah.
Or is it a wah-wah? Is it only a wah-wah?
No, I'm certain about the wah-wah.
You're probably right.
Probably like a million pedals.
Tell us about it.
Well, I thought Jimi Hendrix, of course, is like one of the... But I once saw a TV program in the Netherlands. It was about covers of songs, perfect covers. And there were like three guys, music fundies, who all chose. And one of them chose this version of Voodoo Child by Stevie Ray Vaughan. And I think it was a live version he did. And I hadn't heard of Stevie Ray Vaughan by then, or I may have dismissed him as just, you know, because I was into post-punk and all that. And I thought he's one of those guitar heroes. And then I saw him play it, and he plays it note perfect. And I was so impressed. And I thought, this is like your air guitar brought to real life. He did the air guitar, but on his guitar, and he plays it note for note perfect. And he gives it, you know, all the tweaks and all the... little things that Hendrix does, he does, and he makes it slightly more blues sounding, I think. I think he uses maybe a different guitar, or it's a bit more, it's got a bit more attack than Hendrix's one. And I'd prefer Hendrix's vocals, but I thought, what a perfect, I mean, it must be this guy's dream to do a note perfect version of Voodoo Child by Jimi Hendrix. And there's a local band here in Cape Town, they're called Earth Blues, named after a song of Jimi Hendrix. And their guitarist is like this 22-year-old kid who can play note-perfect versions of Stevie Ray's version of Jimi Hendrix's song. And they're so incredible. You know, these kids, they're so talented. And I think if you are an aspiring guitarist, you see him play, he can play anything, and he just plays it effortlessly. But he must have started as an air guitarist, as we all have. And I'm sure Stevie Ray Vaughan was an air guitarist as well.
Yeah.
It's an amazing song. It's like, as I said, air guitar brought to life.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, it satisfies your requirement that it should be recognizable. Because, I mean, it's, I think for, you know, there's a lot of guitar solos that must be the bane of the life of thousands of teenage guitarists trying to copy these incredibly technical and tricky. Anyway, to me, it's very interesting that there's a whole set of people who really sort of make their living out of being guitar heroes. The trend has continued and people enjoy seeing them. It really has turned the guitar into this virtuoso instrument.
There's tons of tribute bands that do this kind of stuff.
Exactly.
Because when I was in Austin, there's a main drag with all the bars and restaurants and music places. And there was a guy, we went into one, and there was this guy playing Stevie Ray Vaughan, and then imitating him note perfect, and everybody thinks, wow, we're in Texas, we're in Austin, and there's this like, he was like older guy, you know, like maybe late 50s or something, and he could do it so well. Yeah, this is quite amazing if you can imitate something so well. I find it, it's an art.
Yeah. All right, so now this is going to be a, I hope this is a surprise to you, and it's definitely unusual. Take a listen. The Beatles, I don't know whether the song fits in here, but I was just so taken with the fact that, you know, this is the last recording that the Beatles did together. The song is called The End. And what did they choose to do? They chose to do a lead solo. But the interesting thing is that it's all three of them, right? All three of the sort of non-drummer of the band. So Paul and John Lennon and George Harrison, they play it in turns. You can slightly hear the different sounds of the different guitars when you,
they have different sounds.
They play two bars each and then they do it, you know, three times over. So perhaps not the most outstanding, you know, sort of thing that you can really sort of get your teeth into as an air guitarist, but just so unusual and kind of clever. So and you know, the Beatles. So that's...
They weren't known for their solo guitaring, were they?
No, exactly. And it's preceded by a drum solo by Ringo Starr, which is, I think, the worst drum solo I have ever heard in my entire life. I mean, it is really bad to end your career on a drum solo like that. I mean,
And in their whole career, they have one brilliant guitar solo, which is on George Harrison's song, While My Guitar Gently Weeps. And they brought Eric Clapton in for that.
Yeah, it's a brilliant solo, by the way.
But I must say, you know, when you started the song sort of in the middle, it took me a while to, because I thought, I know this, what is it? Yeah. And then, you know, when they go into that, you say, oh yeah, of course it's the Beatles, but it's so un-Beatlesque. It's a very interesting choice.
You know, this is part of the medley. Did I mention this on Abbey Road? So this is their last album, even though the Let It Be came out afterwards. It was the last album they recorded. And I just thought it was interesting that they should choose to go out on this, you know, all doing, you know, this sort of combined leads.
Yeah, it's almost like Blue Oyster Cult.
Exactly. Except they're not doing it simultaneously. They're doing it in sequence. And it was the medley, which was symphonic. I mean, it's just an extraordinary piece of music, all of those songs like put together.
Yeah.
And was amazing and also kind of bad. Because when you listen to the medley, I think, you always think, that would be a great song. You know, just make it a song. I always liked Carry That Weight. I thought Carry That Weight was would easily have been a standalone song and a very popular one. But now it's part of this rather weird sort of mishmash.
And they all had the theme of the band breaking up, didn't they?
Yeah, that's right.
You're going to carry that weight.
About the end,
yeah. And there was also that funny little thing, Her Majesty, at the real end.
Yes.
Is that still part of the medley?
Well, what happened apparently with that was they intended it to be part of the medley. They took it out of the medley, and Paul McCartney said, toss it. But the studio musicians were told, under no circumstances were they allowed to throw away any part of the Beatles at this point. So they left it on the tape. And when they were listening to the medley, the tape kind of rolled on. And then the little sequence about Your Majesty came on. And everybody thought that it was so funny, which was really great in a way, because it just demonstrated the Beatles kept their sense of humor right until the end. So the last track that the Beatles ever did is not, in fact, the end. It is this kind of little ditty. Her Majesty. I'll make her mine someday.
back to guitar, is that nobody ever chooses an acoustic guitar. I mean, there's these magnificent acoustic guitar players, you know, Leo Kottke and John Fay, and, you know, like really, really intricate musicians.
Yes. You're just mesmerized by their fingers.
Yes. By the intricate sounds, but not something to stand in front of the mirror doing. But let's play.
All right, next. Okay, this is your last one. Andy Warhol's Bohemian Like You, and it's not a guitar solo, Fred.
No. it's my tribute to Keith Richards. I mean, because I think the rhythm guitar, you can air guitar to very, very well as well. And as we all know, Keith was the master of the riff. Right. But I thought it's a bit predictable to choose, I don't know, Honky Tonk Woman or Jumping Jack Flash or even Can Get No Satisfaction. And, you know, I love this song. I think it's a brilliant song by the Dandy Warhols. But it's such a ripoff of a song like, I think it's Brown Sugar, that they must have air guitared a million times.
Yes. And then put it into practice.
It's got that dual thing, you know, that made the Stones so good. It's like you have an acoustic guitar, and on top of that, you have an electric guitar, because you can hear that very well. I once DJed at a party and had to play this song like 4 or 5 times because everybody was sort of, and then going play the air guitar when the intro came up, because it is a good air guitar intro.
Yes.
Intros are...
It's more Honky Tonk Woman to me than Brown Sugar, but anyway, the same difference really.
Well, it's a Stones ripoff.
Which
is great. You know, rock and roll is made out of ripoffs. So I thought... we need a rhythm guitar in it as well.
Rhythm guitar.
And we don't go for the obvious ones, so we go for the less obvious ones. Still a brilliant song.
No, I agree. I mean, I think the song is fabulous. And the way the lyrics fit together, and it's just a hook after hook after hook.
And I also wanted something not from the 1970s.
Yeah, no, that's right. All right. Well, cool song. This is the last of our sequence. And sadly, it is definitely from the 1970s. So this is part of my job, hooking out the inevitable song. This is Dire Straits. Sultans of Swing. It's strange that you should mention that you sort of know people who were able to play songs note for note. I actually had a friend who could play this song note for note. He actually showed me places where Mark Knopfler had made mistakes in the solo. And he said, no, you know, he caught his finger there. Actually, the way that you play it is this. This is the strange thing about Dire Straits, is that they were successful in the era where punk rock was taking off. Mm. And they are so different. And they're actually so different to almost everything out there. That's one of the things that I really like about them, is that they just had their own style, and it didn't seem to reference much of its time. There were references. I mean, there's definitely the lead style and bits of country, bits of folk, bits of rock, all kind of in there. But it was a very distinct sound and some great songs. And of course, Sultans of Swing was the song that just put them on the road. Yeah, so maybe you wouldn't be pulling faces so much when you would be doing this. You would be, you'd have a sort of like sense of bliss, and you'd be kind of like sliding quietly there with your little fingers going.
Shall I now say something which will make us lose a lot of listeners?
Yes. You don't like Dire Straits.
Absolutely detest Dire Straits.
What a surprise.
Although I must admit that I bought this single at the time, and I still think it's a good song, but Dire Straits, as you said, came out in sort of 1977, I think, around that time. And me and my mates were big into punk rock. And there was this, the most boring band in the universe playing. And he had this sort of thing around his head, like, I don't know what it was. And like they didn't move on stage. And they were so dull. So dull, I thought. And, you know, I've never, ever overcome that. Because I know they're good musicians, and I know they wrote good songs, and he's a brilliant guitarist, blah, blah, blah. Yes. But they came at, you know, if they come 5 years earlier, 2 years earlier, 3 years earlier, I would have liked them probably, but in 1977, I couldn't stomach them. They were,
Yeah, they were the mirror image, weren't they? I mean, they were the
Johnny Rotten.
Not only of punk rock, but also everything else that was happening at the time. You know, they were...
Yeah, disco.
The mirror image of heavy metal, mirror image of, you know, of new wave even.
There was sort of an extension of pop rock, I think.
Yes, exactly.
Started a circuit and then they became... They sort of outgrew that whole thing.
Yeah.
So the one I'm not going to vote for, the one I'm going to veto. Yes.
All right, well, let's get into it. Okay, so we'll start off with the one that of your selection that you would reluctantly drop in this situation.
Well, Dandy Warhols I would drop. I mean, it was more a joke than a...
All right.
It's good air guitar, but it's not like brilliant guitar work or innovative. Yes. You know, if I'd chosen Keith, it would have been different.
I mean, and I would drop the Beatles at the end because more interesting than a guitar. Okay, so then the one that you would drop.
I can drop one of yours.
And, you know, slightly reluctantly, I would drop I'm Going Home by 10 Years After, just because I think it's not quite distinct enough melodic line to, you know, for this particular, although it's a great song, for this particular sort of requirement.
It's because I would vote for 10 Years After, of course. We never at the time, 69 or whatever it was. We never ever heard a guitarist play that fast. And you didn't play the intro, but the intro was also like, wow. It was like open mouth. You can't hum it along, I agree. But it's, anyway, I would vote for 10 years after. But if you throw it out, you throw it out.
I know. All right, so then that leaves us with Voodoo Child and Painkiller. I'd be very happy to go with Voodoo Child because, you know, it's such a distinctive sound and Stevie Ray Vaughan.
You got a two-in-one. Guitarist.
Exactly. And it's a sort of tribute in a way to the origins of virtuosic guitar.
Yeah, I agree there.
Even though I think Painkiller is just a fabulous.
I do like Painkiller.
No, it's true.
I think in terms of iconic, Voodoo Child.
Yes, exactly.
And it's had various generations of air guitar.
Yeah.
So we have Hendrix, then we have Stevie Ray Vaughan. They're all air guitar, the same song. So Voodoo Child is
good. Okay. Well, Fred, now it's your choice next time. Have you made a decision?
I thought we had a guest.
We most probably do. It depends on whether or not our guest can make the time period that you can make. Let's say.
I think we'll most certainly have a guest. Okay, there are other options as well.
All right. Well, Fred, thank you very much. That was good fun, as always.
That was great fun, Tim. That was me, Fred De Vries, and Tim Cohen with another episode of The Perfect Song For. Thank you so much for listening.
And don't forget, you can find us on X and on Instagram under the obvious designations.
And if you have any spare money, we do have a Patreon account, which is patreon.com/theperfectsong4.
And you can hear the full tracks on Spotify. Please do search for the topic rather than The Perfect Song For or some other variation of that.
And if you have any comments, suggestions, praise or criticism, you can write to us at perfectsong4@gmail.com.
Cool. And do look out for our next pod in a fortnight's time. Let's go out with Voodoo Child.